Hey, so here's a short little preview for the Patreon episode that I just did. It's Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, and I was joined by rapper JJ Demon. So if you like what you hear, once again, you can find the full episode along with 25 other bonus episodes over on www.patreon.com/soundtracker. Yeah, it's really important to the show. I know I say that every week, but yeah, this is where you can sign up 7 days free. You can check this episode out, check the other ones out and see what you think. And if you like it, you know, and you can stay signed up. I would appreciate that. But yeah, here it is. Check it out. Enjoy.
Ain't no use running. Ain't nowhere to hide. The beast is coming and he's got you in his sights. He ain't gonna miss you and he ain't gonna mess around. If you're a movie with original song, the soundtrack are gonna track you down! Oh, yeah!
Well, okay, do you want to do a little bit of cultural background on this one before we get into the soundtrack? Might as well get into that.
I think that I think it's very important for this particular soundtrack, right? Okay, because normally on this show, your soundtrack is produced by one record label, and then they sort of outsource and they get a bunch of songs, and some of them are B-sides that the artist had laying around. Some of them are made specifically for the soundtrack. I used to be signed to the guy that owned Rough House Records. Rough House Records did the Space Jam soundtrack, which was a humongous soundtrack. So I sort of know the ins and outs of how the soundtracks were put together back then. But this was completely different because essentially he just gave RZA a carte blanche to do whatever he wanted. Mm. And I think if I were Jarmusch, I kind of would have wanted RZA to make me my own Wu-Tang album, right? Now, you know, it's not going to be the quality of Forever or 36 Chambers or even an Iron Man or whatever, or even a Tikal 2000, which I recently have gotten back into listening to. It's actually very good. Method Man's second album. But around this time, RZA, they had sort of reached their zenith, but the guys in the group, the Wu-Tang Clan, this is when they had started floating off in different directions. There was some bad blood going on in the group. If you watched the show on Hulu, then you'll know that a lot of the guys were, it was hard to get them all in the studio at one time. So there really is only one song on this album that's credited to the Wu-Tang Clan, right? And it only has, when we get to it, it'll be in my notes, but I think it's only like five or six of the members on it. So it's not even the full clan. And then there's no other Wu members on anything on this album, except RZA is on a couple of tracks. What the album mostly is what RZA was doing with, and we were talking about this, I think before we started recording, the Killa Bees albums, the Wu Chronicles, where he sort of started to branch out. He wanted to go to the West Coast. He wanted to get some West Coast guys. He wanted to get some R&B singers, some reggae singers. Even though on Forever he calls R&B rap and bullshit very famously, but he wanted to get into those genres and kind of test himself. And there's a little bit of hubris in there. You know, he had risen to the absolute pinnacle of rap. You know, he'd reached the absolute top. Now he's scoring a movie. Like, as I said before, he thinks he's beating Quincy Jones at this point. So he gets a little big for his britches, I think. And the album that he ends up releasing as the Ghost Dog soundtrack is essentially a bunch of like cobbled together tracks. Now it does have one consistent sound. I should give it that. Because I think I couldn't find credits for every song on this. So I don't know which ones he produced or which were, because this is when he started to work with Fourth Disciple, Mathematics, some of these other guys that had learned, they called themselves disciples of RZA because they had learned his ways and were essentially producing, you know, for other members of the clan when RZA got too busy. So he probably you know, licensed out some of these jobs to those guys, but definitely a lot of the production was handled by RZA himself. But like I said, this was sort of on the crest of Wu-Tang, and getting into the 2000s is when Wu-Tang starts to lose its relevance. It went back up a little bit after Supreme Clientele, which I think is one of the, I don't know if I said this before we started recording or not. I think that might be my favorite rap album of all time. Ghostface's Supreme Clientele, which RZA was very hands-on with, because a lot of guys were trying at this time from the Wu-Tang Clan to do things that were more the mainstream sound. They were trying to move away from that Wu-Tang sound. And if you look at a guy like U-God or a guy like Capadonna, that doesn't make any sense. They don't make sense over beats that aren't RZA beats, right? As soon as you hear them over something that sounds like Swizz Beatz, you know, it sounds ridiculous. Like, it's unlistenable. But that's what a lot of the Wu guys at this time were doing, and probably why they're not on this album. And also RZA probably didn't want to pay them all. And it was easy to, you know, pay scale or whatever he paid to these guys. So what we have here is sort of an amalgamation of all these outside Wu members. And that's what this is. It becomes a compilation of what RZA was trying to, the artists that RZA was trying to blow up, because he had a piece of them. And so you got like Black Knights, you got some Sons of Man people on there, you got some Killer Army people on there. These are all the outside Wu groups, right? Culturally at this time, if you were expecting a new RZA product, if you were expecting something that had the prestige of like an Iron Man or an Only Built for Cuban Links or anything like that, you're not getting that with this.